Today's episode of Still Entitled is brought to you by Squarespace. It's a fast and easy way to get your website online in an idiot-proof way. When we did our first website at Maximum PC, I don't even think you were there yet.
Yeah.
But we basically paid a dude a few $1,000s and he built a movable type website for us. So, you know, it was okay. But it was a real pain in the butt. And it like, I couldn't go in and change stuff. It was difficult. With Squarespace, you don't have that problem.
CMSs today are amazing. Real-time editing, responsive design automatically, and just tons of templates and assets.
And if you just need like one page that looks really nice and has all of your stuff on it, you know, you don't need a blog roll or anything fancy like that, you can do what's called a cover page. And it'll tell everything you need to tell about your business or site or whatever, portfolio, whatever it is you want, in one page. It's so easy, Jeff Bridges can do it. Wow. So Squarespace, thanks for supporting the show. If you want to sign up, get a 10% off your first order by using the offer code UNTITLED when you check out, and also show your support for this podcast. Welcome to Still Entitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
And good night.
We did that before.
I'm enjoying my new favorite drink.
Okay.
Bundaberg ginger beer. Which is in and of itself phenomenal.
I like that with a little rum or bourbon in it.
And it's yes, right. Yeah. It is Australian in origin.
Really?
That hence the small kangaroo. They now make a diet ginger beer.
Do they make it with real gingers?
Yes. Oh, you can see the ginger floating inside.
He means gingers him and me.
Oh, I stole that joke from Adam's Family Values with regard to Girl Scouts.
No. Oh my God. Raul Julia, I will forever miss him. He's great as the villain in Tequila Sunrise.
Really?
I'm glad you say that. You said that and not Street Fighter.
Street Fighter. I have read about that. Yeah.
Really? That was his last role?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, I think he hid his illness.
That's something that he should have vengeance for.
Jean-Claude Van Damme. Am I right? Kylie Minogue?
Yes, that's right.
And they had like an affair while they were making it.
What?
Yeah,
oh, I didn't know this.
Gross.
Yes, you know. She got a little bit of that. She got a Belgian waffle.
She got the split.
Oh, wow! And now he's doing Volvo or his car commercial.
Dude, that Volvo commercial,
that's amazing.
It's remarkable.
So I think he is actually due for one of the movies.
You know, all of his movies are so poorly made.
Wait, no. Oh. JCVD.
Oh, you're doing it.
I'm doing a segue.
You're doing a segue.
I think JCVD.
It was a really nice segue, Norm.
But let's just say Norm does the best segues and we always miss them.
As has always been the case, defining characteristic of podcasts. Bad segues.
He did JCVD, which is great. He plays like a version of himself.
Did you just call Jean-Claude Van Damme JCVD?
No, there's a movie called JCVD.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's a meta movie about the action hero in which he plays a version of himself, yes. Kind of like openly weeping on camera, and it's sort of a documentary style of him making a movie that is actually made for the...
Is it a mockumentary or is it a meta
documentary? It's not a mockumentary. Okay. It's more like a meta documentary, or it's actually sort of meta fictional.
Is this like when Arnold Schwarzenegger was the governor of California?
Oh, boy.
He's the best Democrat we've ever had in that office.
That's true. Absolutely true.
But I think Jean-Claude Van Damme is due for a great revenge flick.
You're absolutely
a modern
right.
revenge
You mean like a Liam Neeson style, right. Taken style. Or...
Which, Taken.
That is, that movie is so good. Sad that he, Liam Neeson, is now... Like, that is the thing he's known for in popular culture.
Well, no.
It's better than Qui-Gon Jinn.
Actually, there was a long article, I think it was on The Dissolve last year, which is one of my new favorite film websites. And you should check it out, because they have great film writing.
I'm in based on the name.
Yeah. And they talked about the fact that Liam Neeson does a couple of, maybe one or two important movies every year. By important, I mean, like, dramatically interesting and, you know, probably for no money. And then he also does one or two of his, you know, old guy getting revenge on everybody. Mm-hmm. And he does it right now better than anyone alive. So we've got The Grey, and you've got the Taken movies, which are really the weakest of his.
The first one was really good.
Two and three, not so much.
I don't think the first one was very good.
I only watched it once.
The plot bugged the crap out of me. I want to see reasons why they're smart instead of like I just determined exactly who it was. I mean, it just seems sort of like randomly like
was that Craig Ferguson doing Liam Neeson?
This is the whole, yeah.
Okay.
And then he did,
it's still better than the Dick Van Dykes and Mary Poppins.
He did the spy one where he lost his memory.
That one was very entertaining with January Jones.
I've only watched the two Taken movies, I think. I don't think I've seen any of the rest of these.
He's really, really good at that stuff.
I'm just sad. I'm saying that. I'm just sad that people remember him for that now, not for like Schindler's List.
I think people remember him for Schindler's List.
Oh, is that the door blowing open? Okay, that's bad.
Norm's just running away.
Norm had to go to the bathroom.
Norm needs to get his revenge on
someone. Norm had Popeye's chicken for breakfast.
Oh, that's always a mistake. Man, Gina and I got KFC.
There was a guy getting arrested right out.
I know. I was going to go out and ride the unicycle, and I walked outside. And I was like, I'm not going to do that. I don't know what the rules about unicycling on the sidewalk are.
He also did a Walk Among the Tombstones, which was an interesting kind of action movie because it was set before smartphones and the past. And then he did Nonstop. Right. So he's done like.
And Nonstop is very entertaining.
He's kind of become like the old Jason Statham.
Statham. Yeah. Right. And nobody's doing this better than him right now. So as far as I'm concerned, Taken 3 can be terrible. But Liam deserves his awesome success. And I'll watch them all.
There's a trend, and revenge flicks are not new because you had the Bronson
Death Wish films.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All that stuff, you know, but there seems to be this trend now of the guy, you know, who used to be a serious actor and wants to, and now they want to cast him in the dude getting his revenge, who's expert at killing.
This is my fantasy. If I could upload into the Matrix and choose my future, that would be it. I'd love to.
That's what I'm saying.
Be
the old guy in one revenge flick every couple of years. Well, that would be fantastic.
You're reaching that point where you should consider putting yourself out there for one of these revenge flicks.
Everybody, I'm ready to go. Let's do it.
Adam's gonna beef up.
You have a very specific set of skills, and no, they don't need to be. It's not like the old Stallone style.
It could be murdering MacGruber or MacGyver.
It's like they're very unassuming badasses.
All of this is by way of saying that The Man of Tai Chi is a terrible, terrible movie.
Oh my God.
But John Wick is a wonderful, wonderful movie.
I was Keanu Reeves. Just blown away.
I know. I know.
That is it. Okay, so
which one of you was the holdout? You hadn't seen
I'm always the last because I have a 2-year-old.
Okay, right.
That movie. So we watched it we rented it a few nights ago. I ordered the Blu-ray as soon as we finished watching. So I'm like, I'm going to watch this 3 or 4 times easily. It is the thing that people are doing now.
Oh, spoiler cast.
Oh, you're right. This is a spoiler cast for
John
Wick.
We're about to talk the crap out of this movie because it is really worth talking the crap out of. And I will submit that nothing we say would limit your enjoyment of this film. We could tell you exactly.
That's exactly right.
Every bit about how it ends. It's like it's like reading the Raiders script and someone telling you the whole plot. Raiders is no less fun for knowing exactly
the plot is the least important part of the movie. So there's a thing that happened, and I kind of blame J.J. Abrams and Joss Whedon for this.
Okay.
The invention of the smart, self-aware action movie over the last, say, 15 years, 12 or 15 years.
Yes.
And I've been looking for a while to try to figure out what the starting point for this was. I kind of want to think it was Mission Impossible 3, somewhere around there. But the self-aware script for an action movie that culminated with like the Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy, where the whole thing is kind of a wink and a nod to the audience, is never been more obvious to me than in John Wick. So it is a movie that knows all the beats of this story going in.
Right.
You know what's going to happen. Something terrible is going to happen to him, and then he's going to go fucking crazy and kill 1,000 people.
Right.
And then
question is going to be how bad is the dip before his triumph?
Right.
That really is almost the only question.
And they tell you in the opening scene. The opening scene is him crashing the SUV at the end of the rampage.
Right. That's not even his dip though. And his dip in this movie is like the smallest dip.
I know. That's what I loved about it.
He gets tied to a chair.
That's what I love about it. See, I love it when the movies is not like now he's against the real baddie. It's like he pretty much almost never stops throughout the
movie. There's no challenge.
An unstoppable force of doom. And it's so much fun watching him do it. Let's be clear. This movie is hyper violent.
We don't advocate this level of violence.
With blood sprayed everywhere. He is constantly putting bullets in people's faces. I mean, and you see aerosolized blood and brains shooting it everywhere.
So as a piece of choreography, this movie was directed by stunt choreographers.
Two of Keanu's former stunt choreographers from The Matrix.
They worked with him before, and they wanted to make a straight-up revenge film. I think you can appreciate the film on multiple levels. One, how straightforward it is, which we've talked about. Two, The beautiful gunplay of choreography, which it doesn't try to be too frou-frou, like, for example, Christian Bale in
Equilibrium,
mm-hmm. where it's literally a mashup of martial arts and guns,
right?
Explicitly,
it's not gun-fu.
Yeah, no, but it is. There's an elegance in the way, a cold elegance,
and it's an elegance that I haven't felt like I've seen before. Because he never loses focus. It's almost like. I love this word over the last couple of years, proprioception, mm-hmm. right? It's your ability to perceive what's going on around you. And if you watch old footage of Wayne Gretzky, the great one, playing hockey, mm-hmm. you've never seen anyone with proprioception like that.
He always knows what's going on at every part of the ice.
He knows every player on the ice and what their trajectories are. And watching John Wick shoot through that movie, watching Keanu's character shoot through the movie is like that. It's like everywhere he goes, he knows exactly where everyone is.
And so part of the thing that appealed to me is that because they know that we're familiar with this form, this is a form that is well established, and we have expectations. They're toying with your expectations in ways that you aren't normally that wouldn't work if they didn't know you already know the form. So the chair scene is a good example of
right.
that, right? Like he's going to get caught. And he's going to have a bad time. Right. In Casino Royale, when Bond get caught.
I got caught while you were scratching my balls.
Right, yeah. Right, exactly. Like, that's a good turn. And that's the mirror image of this. This is minorest of speed bumps. And, and
With literally the bad guy going, no, I'm quite confident he will be killed while I don't have to watch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm going to leave the room, have a coffee, whatever.
And then I think one of the finest ways that this you can appreciate this movie is the world building it does. In addition to, you know, he's he was the badass hit guy. It's where the world, they don't tell you what you're entering.
What the city is.
You're just entering it because of the hotel.
It's LA, right? It has to be LA.
I didn't get the feeling that it was, I actually felt like it was more New York than LA. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
From a landscape point of view with all the water.
But then there's his house looks like a Malibu house, right?
Yeah, it totally does. But that could be Westchester County.
Yep. Right. Okay.
So the hotel that you go to.
Do you smell pot?
Yeah, totally. This is a mission.
This is the mission where an arrest literally happened. Like, as we started the podcast, they were processing an arrest right in my front door. Now this whole place smells like weed and it's not us.
Nope.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, you have a great neighborhood here. no poop on the sidewalk today. So it was a moral victory.
So that's a bonus. Yeah. There's a bonus.
The Continental Hotel,
which is supposedly where all the hitmen converge, but no one can actually work.
There are rules, and there's an underground. They build a world of the underground.
That's very vampire-y, right?
It is like very vampire. Like the movie feels like a vampire flick in that regard.
Yeah. But it's it's honor and among thieves, and they have characters in there. You know, Lance Riddick, who does the bellman or the concierge, Lester from The Wire. Lester,
yes,
just as an old hitman.
Yeah, was he the guy that held the girl for us?
No.
He's the guy who held the girl. And then he gets killed with the pillow.
Right.
And then he gets killed with
the same guy as the concierge.
And when they go actually, through, it's a very tropey thing, go through the kitchen, down the elevator into the nightclub. That stuff.
Where
that
the Russian
building,
gangsters all hang out.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Willem Dafoe was phenomenal.
Willem Dafoe is fantastic. I kept on saying what I loved about it was while it took you through all these tropes, it didn't waste any of your time trying to be more clever than it was.
No.
And it's one of those things, like, I don't know if you remember, right after Pulp Fiction came out, there was a film called 2 Days in the Valley,
yes.
which was Charlize Theron's first big movie. And 2 Days in the Valley, which is a fine movie, felt way too clever by half. Trying to get to that Pulp Fiction territory.
It was all winks and nods.
Right. And John Wick, which is sort of gesturally one entire wink and a nod, at the same time was just like, it's fight choreographers going, here's what we like about these scenes, and we're just going to take one and run it for like 15 minutes for your enjoyment.
No one's going to look at the camera. There's no going to be no quips.
Right.
Or anything.
Right.
But it reminds me of when you go to a fancy restaurant and you have like a deconstructed version of something that's super familiar to you and then it reassembles in your mouth.
Yeah.
This was a film that was very much like that. right? Like,
yes.
I mean, I didn't reassemble it in my mouth, obviously.
That's not to say that I didn't think it can be improved. We can gush. I will say that I had a couple problems with it. I did not like the captioning for the
That's my biggest problem. Is,
oh, my God.
What was the captioning?
Oh, it was terrible.
Yes, it was so
they
hard to read.
They did these subtitles that felt, they graphically wanted to be interesting with their subtitles. And what they ended up with felt like, well, my kid can use CorelDRAW. It really just felt super cheapy and overworky.
Extruded. Yes. Yeah.
And like the way you like Boogeyman was like bigger and italicized. I didn't like that at all.
No, I didn't like that at all. Well, I mean, I want to keep on that for a second because subtitles are something you should never mess with as far as I'm concerned. Unless Night Watch and Day Watch, the Russian films, did magnificent job by slightly altering. So when the vampire, there's a point at which the vampires in Night Watch can call to people that they have, you know, mesmerized. Mm-hmm. And the subtitles, as they call to them, disappear in smoke each time. And it's one of these little subtle things that's, because they're going standard subtitle, you know, font and kerning and all that, when it does that, you're kind of like, oh, that's cool.
Something different. This means something different.
Right.
Which is what changes in subtitles should indicate.
But the subtitles in John Wick, they drove me nuts. Yeah. I loved Liz Lemon's old boyfriend, Dennis, as the right-hand man of the Russian guy.
Oh, that's who that was.
Yes.
Dummy the whole time.
Isn't he also in insurance commercials now?
He's the bad insurance guy.
That actor, I can't remember his name. I love him.
It's funny because he looks just like the dude from Good Will Hunting, the long-haired, the How You Like Them Apples guy.
They look very similar.
The last thing I was stunned that they killed the dog. I mean, I knew they were going to kill the dog as soon as the dog appeared.
The killing the dog. So this is the first big trope, right? And we should point out that within film language, there's a whole school, and there's a lot of filmmakers who like hate this idea. But there's a school that if you've got a main character and the audience isn't fully identifying with him, you've got to put in what's called a save the cat moment. In which he literally saves a cat, and you see, oh, he's a nice guy. Like, he gives up his parking space for the old lady across the street, or he gives up his subway seat, or
he sticks his hand out, stops the elevator door from closing, right?
Humanizing him, sure.
These are called save the cat moments. And, you know, the other side of it is George Lucas's, one of the best quotes I've ever heard. Is Lucas said, it's easy to make the audience care about a movie, all you have to do is twist a kitten's neck.
It's true.
It's totally true. And the killing the dog is the, like, I don't think my wife will watch this. I don't think I can subject her to it because a dog dies in the beginning and she won't recover from that.
And just to be clear, part of the challenge with the revenge movie is what's the setup? Because you have to make the thing that happens to the guy bad enough to justify killing hundreds or thousands of people in cold blood. Yes. So the sequence of events is wife dies of cancer or something bad.
Right.
Sends him, he goes to the funeral. That night, he gets a gift from beyond the grave that she sent him so he can reconnect with the human race. At this point, we don't really know that he's a hitman.
Right.
Right? The dog, it's a cute beagle puppy named Daisy. She named it for him. The dog integrates himself in his life in 24 hours. And the next day, some Russian gangsters beat the shit out of him, steal his car, and kill his dog.
Right. Oh, Lily Allen's brother.
Is that who that is?
What? He's from a Game of Thrones.
Yes. Oh, right.
He's so amazingly hateable.
Yes.
He does same in Game of Thrones. He does it here. The one thing and the other complaints, so the subtitles are the other thing I thought was they didn't really need a boss fight at the end where he fights the dad.
Oh, I thought that was fine. It didn't bother me.
Like any tragedy, it could have been averted at any number of places,
right? But the thing was that very quickly, at the moment, I thought that was interesting because the moment that it turns out that he's the son of the guy, he knows that he's going to have to kill the entire, he's going to have to burn the entire thing to the ground.
There was a moment that the dad could have just washed his hands of the whole thing and said, look, you've made your bed, go fix this problem yourself.
So there's some great cameos. Willem Dafoe is amazing. So is John Leguizamo.
He's at that moment when he punches the Russian mobster's kid in the face. Yes. And then
the mobster calls him. Why did you punch my son in the face? And he's like, I'm calling you as a courtesy before I kill you. Because this definitely
we have a relationship.
Yeah. Right.
And he goes, oh.
he stole John Wick's car and killed his dog. And he's like, oh, hangs up the phone, punches his kid in the face.
That's awesome.
It was like, you knew you, you expect that guy, you expect John Leguizamo to die a horrible death.
Right.
And they toy with the expectations.
So
right?
the toying with the expectations, and it's efficient filmmaking, right? You know that, like, you don't learn that Wick is a hitman. You knew Wick's a hitman if you saw a trailer, but to come upon this movie without knowing that would be such a deep pleasure.
So I came into it completely cold. I had no idea what the film was about.
So that when you got to the line of "the bodies he burned that day laid the foundation for everything we are."
I didn't realize he was a hitman. The first clue you got to that was when he's talking, the Russian gangsters are harassing him at the gas station because they think he has a car that is much cooler than the car he actually had, because they thought it was a 500, not the, anyway.
Oh, really?
Matter. Yeah.
I didn't realize
the kid misidentified the car. So maybe they got the wrong car for the movie. Right. I don't know which one. But yeah, the kid, when he speaks Russian back to the kid, I was like, oh wait, something else is happening here.
Yeah.
And then, it's, you know, down the road we go.
So delicious. I mean, it's just all of that. Really, really good friend of mine submits that one of the most efficient bits of storytelling in movie history is when John Cusack's character from Gross Point Blank goes back to Gross Point, Michigan, goes to the cemetery, visits his dad's grave, pulls out a bottle of scotch, unscrews the top, and pours it on the grave.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
you immediately
my buddy
know
David
why.
Is like, he's like, I will write my whole life hoping to get a moment that tells that much story with that little action.
Because, wow. Like, if you think about that moment, the whole time up until that point, you're thinking, how is it that John Cusack ends up being an assassin?
Right.
Right?
Yes, exactly.
And then you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, okay, I got it.
There you go.
Yeah.
And,
Dan.
Wick is full of little efficiencies like that, that you're just like, okay, I'll buy this. Okay, I'll buy this. I'll buy that too.
Oh, yeah.
It is. I will say here's a big spoiler. I suspected that Willem Dafoe was on his side when the girl came to the hotel room.
Oh. Yeah.
The I've got you in my sights, but I'm going to shoot your pillow because I want the kill instead of her.
Mm-mm. No. I mean,
that was the purported idea. But then I was like, I still don't think so.
Willem Dafoe doesn't miss.
No, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
That's another playing with expectations, right?
Yes.
You see Willem Dafoe. He's a monstrous looking man. You expect him.
Born villain.
Right. You expect him to
from
be the heavy.
Streets of
in
Fire
everything.
On. Yeah. To Live and Die in LA on down.
Yeah. And there he shows up as the compatriot.
Yes. Honor among assassins.
It's deeply assassinating. Oh, okay. So I watched it with my boys, Thing One and Thing Two. We were totally doing the whole, yelling and screaming.
You saw it at home, not
yeah,
the theaters.
We saw it okay. at home. But the moment that we had to rewind and go back is after he's gone through the bathhouse and now he's in like one of the bar areas and he shoots a guy, shoots another guy, and goes to shoot a third guy and he shoots him in the chest, but now he wants to hit him in the head, but his gun's out. And so he carefully unloads, pops another one, cocks the gun, and then shoots the guy in the face.
Oh, yeah. The reload pause.
But maybe the best one I've ever seen.
At the same time, there's a moment when he's going into the club to murder a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And he talks to the doorman, who's clearly somebody he has a previously existing relationship with. He's like, why don't you check out for tonight? I'm not going to murder you. You're cool. Yeah. And then goes on and kills everybody else. There's an essential humanity that Keanu manages to keep in a role that means that he remains likable even as he's doing these horrible
things.
That
is the very save the cat moment.
You're right. You're absolutely right. That's the save the cat moment is let the giant doorman go.
Yeah.
Yes.
I can't recommend this movie enough. I appreciate that we were talking about it with Jeremy here the other day, working on a secret project with Jeremy.
Jeremy Williams of This Is Only a Test.
And he was surprised that we all loved it as much as we did.
He has delicate sensibilities sometimes about violence too.
Interesting.
I think the way we had the conversation was that we can go into a movie knowing what to expect. And his argument was, you know, if you're going into a movie, he wants not only a fun movie, but a good in the, you know, the.
I totally agree. And I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
But I think John Wick supplies this other strata of enjoyment that is, it's bubblegum. I mean, this is really like.
It is a popcorn movie.
It is a popcorn movie, and it cost almost nothing. I think $14 million or something
that. That shows, because like a lot of the blood was clearly CG. And
I'm happy with CG blood. I'm totally ready. Like, you know, Martin Scorsese said it completely changed his process. I don't notice it, and I don't like, I don't notice it unless I'm trying to be conscious of it.
First season of Walking Dead, I notice because it's a little, it's pretty rough. This, I thought, was in places pretty rough, and some places was really good.
Yeah.
But it's one of the, it's like ragdoll animation in the early 2000s. I always notice.
Yes.
That annoys me. The bad CG blood annoys me. When Scorsese does bad CG blood, I don't mind.
Oh, bookmark. I've got something. Once this podcast is over, I have something to tell you about one of our episodes this year.
Ha! Oh, that's just mean.
Oh, I know.
I have to cut that one out. I'm sorry, guys.
I'll tell you. Okay. Then you can cut it out and cut back in.
Oh, people get really mad.
After.
Okay.
But John Wick, go watch it. There's so many of these revenge movies coming out. I think Kevin Costner did one.
Oh, really?
Sean Penn's coming out with one directed by the guy who did Taken. It's called The Gunman. I think you should prime yourself, Adam. Think about how you want to do a badass.
I'm totally ready.
What's your save the cat moment? Mm-hmm. What's going to be your very special skill?
Oh, I think I'll be pretty good at being like. I think I could be the likable guy who wreaks havoc.
On a murdering rampage.
Mm. I think the audience would stay with me.
Yeah, I really like this movie a lot. I want to know more about how many. And also, I can't say enough about Keanu because his. You see the thing that made Keanu great for The Matrix in the efficiency of movement and just the deliberate every aspect of this performance is deliberate on his part, I believe.
And let's also bring this up that Keanu is both very open about his limitations as an actor and from people I know that know him, one of the nicest guys alive. He had a stunt crew of, I think, 17 to 20 guys on the three Matrix films. Mm-hmm. And they were with him through almost all of that. And he became really close with them up to and including giving them Ducatis one year for Christmas, mm-hmm. like each of them a Ducati motorcycle. And then also cutting them into his profit sharing on the second two Matrix films to the point that I believe each of them will make well over $1 million by the end of the Matrix's delivering checks for residuals and broadcast. So he's clearly finds something really important in working with these guys. And it shows on film that like they're not only terrific fight choreographers, but terrific directors. It's just wonderful.
It's a delightful movie. I really thoroughly enjoyed
it. Delightful killing spree.
He just needs to try again on directing.
Was there a total body count? Do we know?
70s. Yes.
So there's a supercut you can watch online of all of his kills in the movie. And I think how many?
Like 76.
76.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
I know, like so much more.
It seems like more. There are some very funny bits in the supercut as he's pumping bullets into someone and they're not quite dead, and it's where it decides to call them dead.
So I guess the first 20 or so you really pay attention to, and then after that it just seems like a...
We didn't even talk about the cops showing up.
Yes, this is the send. Who are you going to send? Send everybody.
Oh, right. This is after the... Okay.
Right. There's two fights in his house. The first one is when they kill the dog. The second one is when they send everyone to his house. And
he officially kills them. And then the disposal, before the disposal happens, the doorbell rings.
So he's in his house in the dark, and he's kind of like... He's not wearing a bathrobe, but he's not like...
He's like wearing sleeping clothes, basically. Yeah.
And he's just wreaking all of this havoc in the dark. And this is where you're like, holy crap, this guy is like the best thing I've ever seen. And then at like towards the end of this, there's a ding dong.
Right after the last guy is killed.
Right after the last guy is killed. And he goes to the door, and you see before he opens the door that there's the flashing lights of a cop car. So clearly there's been a noise complaint. And he opens the door, and this is one of my favorite bits in the movie.
It was good because at this point, this is another save the cat moment, right? Kind of, but not really.
Well, it's just where you realize that the universe you're in has a history you don't know about, and you're just going to have to follow. You're just going to have to piece it together for yourself. What happens is the cop who opens the door, and there's a cop there, and the cop is like some blonde guy, and he's like,
hey, John.
Hey, John. Yeah.
Heard some noise complaints from neighbors.
Yeah, what's going on? What's going on?
John is all sweaty and he's got a gun in his hand.
But Wick says, oh, did you get some noise complaints?
Right.
And he says, yeah. He says, well, you know, doesn't it make an excuse?
Right.
Nothing.
And then the
gun is behind his back.
And then
the
cop
time.
Goes, he looks behind him and there's a body on the ground behind him in his hallway. And he says, you working?
that starts that recurring joke of, are you back working again?
Right.
Which is a great way to introduce that joke. And
the Snake Plissken joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, at that point you're like, oh, I don't know anything about this world. And I'm kind of intrigued.
Oh, yeah. You want to know more.
Right.
You always want to know about the CD underbelly.
You want to know more.
Yes. Oh, hell, there was something else I wanted to talk about.
Gold coins.
I completely forgot. Gold coins, it doesn't matter.
No, gold coins are one of the best parts of the movie.
There's a replica, prop for them.
The gold coin is the incredible part of the world building. The continental, but the value of a body for disposing as a gold coin and killing someone, you get a gold coin.
What is it? You call food delivery? Or laundry?
Laundry?
It's catering. Catering for a dinner party for 12. The gold coin is showing the actual physical size of how much he's accumulated when he breaks through his floor versus his boss and the vault of gold coins. Like that is a symbol of power.
Right.
Okay. So that's, I think that's John Wick. I think that'll do it.
I think we've covered everything.
We all like this movie a lot.
We love this movie. I can't wait till I want to borrow the Blu-ray from you because I want to see extra materials.
Yeah. I want to know how they did a lot of I want to know if they talk about the world.
Yeah.
Because
the
world is super interesting. Anyway, we'll be back next week. Thank you for watching. If you want to know more about Still Untitled, go to testa.com/podcast. We're there. Like us on YouTube.
Please.
Review us on iTunes. That's the best thing you can do to help let more people find out about the show.
Awesome.
And we'll be back next week with another episode.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Norman Chan, that was a hell of a podcast.
Yeah, indeed it was. And we're going to thank Squarespace again for sponsoring this show. Before, there were services like Squarespace. Web CMSs were terrible. I think my first website I built from GeoCities, hosted by GeoCities.
Wow.
And I used Microsoft Front Page build it.
Did you have an animated GIF that said under construction on it?
Absolutely not. I didn't do that. But it was pretty bad. And I used tables, which you shouldn't use to frame everything.
You had to open up Notepad and then FTP stuff up and down.
It was it looked bad, and today's websites, of course, look much, much better, and anyone can do it.
And if you need help getting your site up and running, they have 24/7 online support. It's $8 a month. You can get 10% off your first order if you use the offer code Untitled when you sign up, and also show support for the podcast. Thanks for listening.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.